Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a kickoff edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. And I'll tell you, the overwhelming, inescapable impression I have coming out of this game is wow. Imagine when this team hits its stride. I'm sure that we all watched a lot of college football this Saturday, this Sunday, this last Thursday, coming up on Monday. It's sort of a mecca of college football. I'm sure that we watched quite a number of games, and there were a lot of games where you could clearly tell, wow, it must be the first week. It's clumsy play. Teams did not look up to their billing. Either they were not prepared or just the billing was wrong. And so there's a lot of teams that we got to see that we recognize, hey, they're going to improve as the season moves on. This is why there is the expression midseason form, because we didn't see that from a lot of teams over this weekend. But when you look at Alabama, wow, that looked pretty close to a midseason form in terms of the production. I think there were total 500 yards, certainly 44 points, with all of the replacement up and down the coaching staff as well as up and down the roster. And not just players being replaced, but the stars that were being replaced for Alabama to roll out such an impressive win, such an impressive showing. It really does make you think, does this team have room to improve? Yes, spoiler alert, they do. And how much better can this team look when it gets a couple of three games under its belt and really sort of evolves into a midseason form when it's a sort of a hardened, gelled product that's rolled out? Boy, that's going to be really, really impressive. So let's jump in. Offense like we do. Let's hit a couple of three more bullet points that I have. We'll try not to dive too deeply into any single of these, but I think we'll sort of shotgun some critical topics and some interesting points across the offense and the defense that you may not be seeing in some of the media outlets. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't start with Bryce Young and all the headlines and all the articles and everything that is everything reporting that the game is going to start with Bryce Young. I'm going to start with Bryce Young. I'm just going to take a little bit of a left turn in some of the analysis or in some of my thought process here. So, look, everything that's being said, all of the sort of exhaustive expression of how well Bryce played is 100% accurate. I don't take away from any of that at all. I am right there sort of leading the charge. I thought his poise and his composure was top shelf. I think he looked better than, you know, maybe Mac did in some of his starts. That is a point of comparison, not a full-blown comparison. I think Bryce scrambled to pass as opposed to scrambling just to run. And so he was reading his progressions. I think of almost the juxtaposition between Tua and Jalen. Jalen would run to run, and Tua would scramble to set his feet and pass. And if you take those as sort of two polar extremes, Bryce was much more in the direction of Tua. And again, I'm not comparing any more than just style of play, not one being better than the other, but there's a certain style of play. And so Bryce, who has the ability to move, I don't know that he's as mobile as Jalen necessarily as a downfield runner, but he's a very mobile. Bryce is a very mobile player, and he certainly scrambled to pass. I think the opening touchdown to I'd have to thank ESPN for not getting to see that because the other game running over and such. But upon replay, the opening pass, the opening touchdown to Mechie was clear evidence of early in the game when a player is going to have maybe some anxiety, some adrenaline, that Bryce rolled out very calm, very composed, looked like a veteran, set his feet, knew the progression, knew where the receiver was, and threw a nice ball, nice catchable ball to Mechie, who was able to turn that into a touchdown. And so that's good on both players. But that, in a nutshell, opening drive of the game really set the tempo. Dude's ready. Dude is ready to play. And I think 100% in agreement with everything that you're going to see or read, sort of all the breathless commentary that you'll get on, that. I think it's appropriate and fair for Bryce. A lot of the interviews that I saw, or a lot of the articles I saw, were written off of Bryce's interview. And then it's just a sort of a regurgitation of that. And one of the things that Bryce said is that he was very pleased. He didn't use the word honored, but that's sort of the impression that I got, that it was really inspiring and confidence building within him that Bill O'Brien, second play of the game, allowed Bryce to throw the ball down the field. And that's true. That does demonstrate a confidence in the young signal caller, in the young quarterback. I think that's chess. I think there are at least two other components that you can wrap around that decision that sort of convert that from chess to checkers. So did we have confidence in the quarterback to allow Bryce to throw down the field on the second play of the game? Yes, absolutely. That is true. No debate there. I think there's two different levels or layers that you could wrap around that. Bryce certainly didn't reference them, and I haven't seen these in any of the interviews as well. But let's think about it from a coaching standpoint. And actually, the two points I want to make are both coaching related. Let me knock one out real easy. Hey, we predicted this. This was in our preseason, that very early in the season, we needed to establish Jamison Williams as a downfield threat. We needed to go to him to demonstrate his speed, to spread the field vertically. And so we knew that. We predicted that weeks ago. And so the fact that they did that second play of the game, yep, all right, we called that one. But it was also true. We said that Jamo needed to make plays. Not just it couldn't be an empty threat. We had to pull the trigger on that play for it to be a threat. But he needed to catch some passes and demonstrate his speed for it to be a viable threat. Well, we did see that later in the game, where he absolutely took a pass, turned on the jets, and went for a long run. So it's established that we will throw down the field to him, even with the young quarterback, and that he has the speed and athletic capability and the hands to make the play work. So it's a loaded gun, to use an expression. There's another layer, and this is where this becomes sort of a chess match, a chess game, as opposed to just a checkers game. How many times have we seen at the start of a season a young quarterback, someone coming in off the bench, and they overthrow their passes, they overthrow their receivers? It's a simple, wow, we set them up with just a simple little swing pass, or just something over the middle, or just something over in the flats. It's just a silly, stupid, simple play, wide open. It's pitch and catch. You do this in the hallway of the dorm. It's such an easy pass. And the quarterback is so hyped up, so full of adrenaline and energy, that he overthrows the ball. Now, sometimes that's an incomplete pass. Sometimes that can have, in a confined space, that can have negative repercussions if it goes to a defender. And so how do you mitigate that? Let her rip. Throw it down the field. So if you overthrow him down the field, nobody catches the ball. Worst case, if they do catch the ball, it's a 40-yard punt. But throw the ball down the field. And then what you do is you just let the quarterback almost exhaust that initial burst of adrenaline. They're going to roll out. They're going to roll back. They're going to heave it. And all of that adrenaline is going to go in a 40-yard pass, as opposed to a 3-yard outlet pass. Then you come back. Now you hope you catch it. You hope you connect. You have sort of stretched the defense. You've done all of these things. But what you've also done, exhale, quarterback goes back to the huddle, gets the next play. Whether it completed or not, it sort of burned off some of that initial sort of burst adrenaline that the quarterback had. And I think that's part of what we saw Bryce there as well. You've got to trust the guy to let him do it, but then you got to let him do it so he can settle down and then just get into the flow of the game. How many times have we heard quarterbacks say, after I get that first hit, I kind of settle down? Well, sometimes just letting rip of that first ball can have a similar impact. And I think that's a little bit maybe what we saw with Bryce. And it'll be interesting to see when we get into sort of midweek interviews if we don't see that kind of layered in again. But definitely a couple of thoughts that I had just on that play, Bryce's commentary around it, And then certainly just the play of the game, or the play of throughout the game, not of the game, but throughout the game, the play throughout the game. I thought Bryce was really, really on top of his game. He passed for over, I mean, it was four touchdowns, obviously record setting in that regard, which was interesting. I forget the yardage that he had, well over 300, 350 ballpark. And so that was record setting in that regard. And of course, Alabama offense had over 500 or right at 500 yards total offense. So certainly productive there. And Bryce was instrumental, as is the quarterback always, in a successful offensive showing. So hats off there. Alabama scored in the first five possessions, three touchdowns, two kicks. And so you could reason that the game was over early. And again, so that's something certainly that is good to see in an opening week kickoff. There were a lot of games where teams literally just sweated out. I joked. There was a guy they showed on TV for the Oklahoma game, and they said the temperatures were touching, 100 there. So it was just super hot. And this Oklahoma fan looked like a big guy, kind of like me, and was just drenched in sweat. And it was a 5-point game late in the fourth. And I just turned to the folks I was watching the game with, and I said, that dude right now, his thought bubble says, I have sat in too much of this damn heat for this. And so as Alabama fans, we didn't have to endure that. So that is certainly good. The offensive line, I want to talk a minute about the offensive line. I think this is one of the areas where the offensive line played well, but there's a significant ramp for improvement. And we're going to start to see that over the coming weeks. I want to give a shout out or credit to Kennesaw Caleb on one of our Zoom calls. He brought up the prospect of Dalcourt taking over the job at center and allowing Chris Owens to flip over to the right tackle spot. And this is had a little bit to do with Kendall Rudolph's ankle, and then a little bit with just the consistency of snaps from Owens. But Owens, still being one of our better linemen and better offensive leaders, wanted to keep him on the field to the extent that we could. And so I thought that was very compelling, very interesting, makes a lot of sense, and that's exactly what happened. And so Dalcourt took over the center spot. He has been sort of the center in waiting for the last couple of years, and he, I thought, acquitted himself very well Saturday against Miami. So Darian Dalcourt, I think, is definitely a player that we're gonna look to solidify that center spot as we move forward. Chris Owens at that right tackle position now, I think that's going to be interesting. Randolph came back, but he ended up playing more at the tight end position, which is kind of something that we had forecasted as well. I thought Chris Owens played well. I do think J.C. Latham is still the player to watch there. There was a point in the game. It just sort of caught my eye. I don't know if Chris lost a shoe or he lost a helmet or got dinged. I don't recall exactly, but there was a reason that he went out for a play or two and JC went in. And again, just right off the bench, and it seemed very quickly. It was just a play or two. But I thought he played well. He looked good in those instances. And so that's just it's almost a non-consequential snapshot. But, nonetheless, there it is. He didn't walk out on the field and fall on his face. I do think he's going to get worked into, talking about JC, I think he's going to get worked into the position more and more this next week against Mercer. Probably a really good opportunity for him to get, 20, 25, 30 snaps. And so that'll be an interesting opportunity to see how he acquits himself there. I think JC is on the rise. And I think when he gets a little bit under him, his talent level will pass Chris Owens. I think Chris Owens' experience right now is putting him ahead. JC has the talent, not the experience. And right now, Saban loves his floor. Let me understand the floor and I can build from it. I can't build from a floor that I don't know where it is. Once I know the floor, I can build. When JC gets closer to that same level of floor, he'll take over the job because his floor will continue to rise. Because I think net-net, he's going to be a better player than Chris Owens. Nothing against Chris Owens. JC's a talent. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I do think I don't like the term unsettled at the offensive line because that has a negative connotation, but we're not settled at the offensive line. So I think we're still a little bit of work in progress there. I think the first 2-3 weeks of the season will be an extension of camp. We've said that before. We've seen that before, especially on the offensive line. There's always a point. There's always sort of a milestone point when we will know this is what the offensive line looks like. A couple of years ago, Deontay Brown was suspended for the first four games of the season. We knew that the offensive line would not be officially finally settled until Deontay came back. And that was what gave us the opportunity to put Lance Dickerson in at the center spot. So that would have been 2019, right? And I think last year we were probably a little more settled out of the gate, but still we've seen this before, right? And so nothing to worry about. We had, I thought, a good showing across the offensive line. It will get better, and there will be personnel movement, and it will be better as a result of that. So that'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye out on. The running backs, I want to say all three running backs looked really good. I know that there was a fourth back, and he had a fumble that turned out – he still fumbled the ball. It was going to be a loss of possession, but it turned out that Roydell, he got the ball back. Roydell Williams, he got the ball back, and so it was less offensive, but it was still a fumble. And I don't know that he came back after that. So he only had – I didn't look at the stats – maybe two or three carries. So I'm not really counting him when I say all the running backs looked good. The three at the top of the list – I thought all looked really good. Brian Robinson looked really good. I thought he had – now, he's a workman running back. He averaged right at 5 yards a carry. That's about what he's going to do, but that's a good number. He's a physical runner, absolutely, and we like that. We love that. He's a seasoned runner, a seasoned player on the team. We certainly like that as well. I thought he demonstrated a little more burst Saturday than we've seen from him. He seemed to – when he got into the open field, have an extra gear or have a little extra in his step that I enjoyed seeing. And so getting him more carries, more reps, I think there's an opportunity that he can break some nice runs. Jace McClellan, I thought, looked good. He just didn't look as good as we remember him looking in his limited play last season. Looked like he's put on some weight. I'm not yet going to call it bad weight, but he looks thicker than he did last year. And so to the extent that will impact his burst, I don't know, because we didn't see him really get open for long running lanes against Miami. I don't know if that was a function of the offensive line that we've talked about, or did Miami really say when 21 is back there in the backfield, we got to focus on him because he's the game breaker. I don't know what their game planning was, but they seemed to gang tackle Jace with a little more aggression than the other two. It may be just that's where my mind went when I saw them make a couple of plays, or it could be that they game planned Jace a little more aggressively, given the burst that we've seen from him. But it'll be interesting to see how he evolves. Still, just a supreme talent at the running back position, and I think he's going to be a number one or code number one before the season is out. And then just hats off to Trey Sanders. He looked phenomenal. He looked like he had a swivel back in his hips. If we'll recall, last season against Mississippi State was his breakout game. He looked really, really comfortable in that game, and it took him multiple games to get to that level of comfort. And in that game, he looked like he was going to take off down the stretch. And, of course, that was just days before the car accident. There was a part of me that said, hey, it may take him a couple of weeks to get back to that same level of comfort. And it turns out it didn't. He looked very comfortable in the backfield, very comfortable with the ball, very explosive with the ball. And so to the extent that Saban said that Trey was approaching 100% coming into the game, boy, he looked right at it. And if he's got some uptick there, that's just going to be even more phenomenal. So I like the top three running backs. They all looked very, very good. If I had to rank them, and this may be a thing we do, I don't know. If I had to rank them 1, 2, 3 today, I think I would go Trey, B-Rob, and Jace. And so we'll keep a watch on that. And if that sort of fluctuates, and that may be a fun little feature that we add, how do we rank those backs? Sort of game to game. Every game is a sort of snapshot in time, so we're not making definitive conclusions. But as we trend it, we'll see how that plays out. Bryce hit nine different receivers which speaks to depth across receivers, as well as Bryce working through his progressions. Again, he scrambled to pass, not scrambled to run. Tyson came in and added a receiver to his sort of roster. So there was 10 different receivers that call passes. So I thought that was very, very good. Again, it speaks to depth and diversity on the roster. Easily could name four or five receivers that that will catch passes that didn't. And so you start to look at, you know, hey, there might be 15 different receivers that are going to be in the rotation for catching balls. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. That doesn't count all of the running backs necessarily. I think B-Rob was one of the recipients of a pass, but I think any of the receivers could be. So I think we're easily north of 15 players that could catch a pass, is a legitimate target to catch a pass. So that'll be interesting to see how that evolves. I think some of the better receivers, the higher potential receivers that we have on our roster, did not catch passes on Saturday. And so maybe that's, you know, Billingsley didn't catch a pass. Hall didn't catch a pass. There are others. And so that's why I sort of emphasize that point, that there are highly talented wide receivers, pass receivers that were not amongst the 10 that caught a pass. And so to me, that is heartening. And we'll see how that evolves forward. Speaking of those catching a pass, Cameron Latu, wow. He was exactly what we predicted, just all condensed into a single game, which means he was much more dynamic than we predicted. I thought he might, you know, our prediction was he's going to be a move the chains guy, and he might get 7 or 8 first downs sort of in key spots over the course of the season. And he might have, you know, maybe 2 or 3 touchdowns on the season. Well, you know, he just whips out 2 touchdowns in the first game of the season, and looked very, very impressive. The first touchdown near the goal line, he makes a nice move to the outside on the tight end or on the linebacker, and then cuts back in, perfectly placed ball, little sort of skinny slant there where he tucks out and jumps in, and just a wide open pass. That was very nice. And then his second sort of longer play, and even Cam said it was just a sort of pitch and catch and run, but he looked like he ran something of a cross or a curl, found a soft spot in the zone, and then got the ball and sort of went to work. A couple of attempted tackles, nothing too aggressive. He was able to run through those, and then certainly in the end zone as well. So just really pleased with his play, and excited what he did. He had a little Irv Smith in him, right? And so that was exciting. For my money, the best tight end in the Saban era, when you think about just true, authentic tight ends. And so for Cam to remind me a little bit of Irv, for me, boy, that's high praise. And people want and expect and look for different things in tight ends. That's fair. But boy, that Irv Smith and looking like Cam now, very, very much like that. I want to talk about Jahlil Billingsley. He did play. And if you watch the game on TV, Todd Blackledge called out, hey, Jahlil Billingsley, this is his first play of the game. This is his first time in the game. And God bless Todd. I love Todd Blackledge. But no, Billingsley had been in before, and maybe a quarter before, certainly a series or two before. But Billingsley was the fourth tight end in the game. And I thought that was interesting. That was certainly by design. And yes, I am counting Kendall as well. But Miller Tennyson, Major Tennyson, was in there. God bless Miller Miller Forstall. I'm going to continue to reverence him for years, I think. But yeah, Major did play. And of course, we talked about Cam. Now, if you want to know, like, well, when did Billingsley go in? If Todd spotted him sometime later, there was a point in the game where the camera caught Coach Saban talking to Billingsley on the sideline. And I think that was after Latu's second touchdown. And I made a point with the folks that I was watching. I said, that right there is something that won't be talked about, and no one will make a big deal out of those two folks having that conversation right there. But that is a critical component. That is an example of why Coach Saban is such a brilliant coach and why he's so successful, because he cares about the individual. And so Billingsley has been in the doghouse. We know he's an incredibly talented player. And so what do? We use the tight end, and then in a moment that is in the middle of the game that no one really expects to see, just the camera catches them, Saban's there having a conversation with Billingsley. And you can tell they are having an authentic sort of man-to-man conversation. And I know that Saban's like, those could be your touchdowns. But they were having sort of a real conversation, and Billingsley seemed to be engaged and active in the conversation. And Saban was in the heat of the moment of the battle of the game, was taking a moment out to talk to Jahlil and talk about, you know, we want to get you in the game. We know that you're talented. We got to have you take care of some business, but these can be your touchdowns. These can be your plays. You can be out here scoring those. And I know that was a component of the conversation. Right after that, the next offensive series after that, Billingsley was in the game. Now, I sort of overindulged my excitement for that moment, and I said, I bet you we get Billingsley a touchdown here before the game's out. And that would have been a little probably two storybook when I look back on it. But we did make, and where Todd saw him, was when Billingsley made a nice play. He was a lead block, sort of on an inside run. And so we didn't just put Billingsley out there just to put him out there. We put him out there in a material role. And the lead block on an inside run is nut and bolt activity for a tight end. And so we definitely put him in and used him in that regard. I think maybe I'm just a little too storybook on this as well, but I think we're going to see an uptick in Billingsley's attitude. Not that we get to see that, but I think we're the manifestation of that, his play when he comes in the rotation, his production, his performance, and I think positive comments from Saban as well. So I missed the post game. I'm going to have to go back and do that. So hopefully I'm not saying too many things that we kind of know. But if he didn't talk about Billingsley in the post game, wait for the midweek or maybe even the SEC conference call or the hey coach on Thursday. It'll be a question. Somebody asked the question in hey coach Thursday. So we'll hear Saban mention Billingsley's name and maybe get some insight in that little sideline conversation. I would love that. And then let's see how that plays forward. But definitely want to give some props to coach and to Jahlil in that regard. All right, wrapping the offense, let's go mini game ball like we do. And I've alluded and tried to avoid saying his name, although I didn't. I'm going to give my mini game ball to Kendall Randolph. We talk about guys that just, you know, contribute below the radar. They don't get the headlines, but their contribution to the team, to the game, to an outcome of a game, potentially even, it can't be overlooked, although it is underlooked. That's sort of the persona of the mini game ball. And Kendall Randolph, I think, definitely characterized that this week. He's a guy that in the start of camp was the starting right tackle, which there was maybe some surprise that he was the starting right tackle. He gets a little dinged up, which you think that's just the worst of luck. And so he effectively loses that job. But guess what he does do? He starts at a tight end position, at that sort of 13 personnel, that blocking tight end position. When he puts on the big 85, you know that's really an extra lineman out there. And so Kendall started in that position. He may not have been one of the initial 11 on the first play of the game, but we know that starter, there's a bigger sort of envelope of starting positions based on personnel groupings and such. And Kendall is right there. And he played very, very well in that capacity. And so his attitude clearly is in the right place. His athleticism is clearly in the right place because we will find a place to put him on the field. I think JC nets out at the right tackle spot. And I think Kendall's ability to play that tight end where he could line up outside of JC is what helps enable JC to do that. If Kendall weren't willing to do that or able to do that, then, you know, frankly, Kendall may get the right tackle spot. But because his willingness to contribute to the team and the betterment of the team would allow him to play that tackle, that tight end spot, so JC can play the tackle spot. I just there's the magic there that coaches just love. And I think that's something that you're not going to see anywhere. No one's going to say that. No one's going to write an article about it because, you know, like no one would read it. And to the extent that you're listening to me, which a lot of people don't, so maybe I should stop talking about it. But I just think that's a damn cool thing that Randolph brings to the equation, to the team, to the line, to the tight end position. And for that, a very well-deserved mini game ball. All right. Let's flip the field and let's talk defense. And when I think about the defensive performance for Alabama on Saturday, I just think, yes, 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 this is the defense we've been looking for. It's deep at every level. And I think this defense is the counterpunch to the spread offense. I think, and I've said this in a couple of different forums. I talked about it on a Zoom call recently, you know, when there's a lot of sort of energy and sort of a simplified narrative of Lane Kiffin came and modernized the offense. I think part of that's true. Part of that's an oversimplification. But who modernized the defense? Coach Saban did with his recruiting and who he – the type of players and the depth that it levels and the versatility at levels, Saban modernized this defense. And so there was a point in time when he laid his head on the pillow and sort of dreamt of what can the defense be in this new era. I think this is the defense that he dreamt up. And the versatility that this – the depth and versatility that this team this stop squad offers, I think, is outstanding. I think – and I saw this in multiple Miami articles, maybe to the extent the fellow mentioned it in the interview with Miami – Bill, that Saban defenses struggle with a mobile quarterback. Well, I think that used to be true. I think this defense, and, you know, it's hard to call Derek a fully mobile because he's coming back from injury. And so I want to give him credit in both regards. He's a super talented quarterback, but also coming back from injury. And I don't want to heap too much expectation on him. But he is the type of quarterback that Alabama has struggled with. He's also a good passer. And so I'm not calling him a Watson, Deshaun Watson, for a lot of reasons. But I'm not calling him a Deshaun Watson because, you know, Watson was sort of the perfect mix of a capable runner as well as a capable passer rather. And I don't know if, you know, Derek King is quite at that level, but he's more in that level than, you know, other quarterbacks will say. But obviously he's coming off the injury. Derek at one point was, you know, 11 of 12, but 0 points to show for it and not a whole lot of offensive production. I think he was 11 of 12 at one point, you know, for 70 or 80 yards. So not a lot of production. I think this defense, the versatility and the depth, I want to anchor back to that point. I think this is the defense that Saban sort of envisioned that has the versatility, has the depth, has the talent, has the speed to take on the more versatile mobile spread offenses. And so super, super, super duper excited about this defense and how they performed. You could say, well, you know, Miami sort of unraveled some of that and they were able to move the ball well in the second half. And a little bit they were with some slants and, you know, they're good. You know, they're on scholarship too and their coaches get paid. And so they went in the half and they dialed up a couple of different plays. But I think they went to the well too often on the slants. Malachi picked them off one. And so I think to the extent that they adjusted, Alabama adjusted certainly as well. So I, you know, say that a little bit about the defense. Again, certainly excited. When we think about the defense, other than just our excitement about the roster and the team and the players, when we think about, hey, just talk about the performance on the field. What did you see Saturday? What sort of jumped off the screen at you? And 150% what jumped off the screen at me. And again, a lot of headlines are going to be on this. A lot of people are expecting, you know, great things here, but Will Anderson, you can't talk about the defense without talking about Will Anderson. He was disruptive and just really just growing into a complete player. I saw at least on one play, potentially more than one play, where his man split out. And so he split out. Will Anderson split out in coverage. And so you think, I don't know that we would have wanted him to do that. I don't know that the Alabama defensive coaches would have wanted Will to do that last year. But they seemed very comfortable with him doing that this year. Now, as an aside, if I were an offensive coordinator trying to game plan this Alabama defense, I think I would spend the entirety of the first quarter trying to figure out which of my personnel in which of my formations that I could split out would get Will Anderson to go with them. And then I would just spend the rest of the game running those plays. Because if we can get Will sort of out of the play, I would, thinking this of as an opponent, if Will Anderson is not in the play at the in the box and we've got him lined out wide and we just don't pass to that guy, then I'll play you 10 on 10 because I'll take that trade every day. And so that I don't know how stupid or crazy that sounds, but if I were an offensive coordinator, I would tinker with that idea. And hopefully that's something our coaching staff will sort of anticipate and have a game plan for. But nonetheless, Will Anderson, and frankly, I don't even care what his stats were. I think he had 2 sacks. I don't even care what his stats were. He was disruptive. Where he lines up, the opponent knows that's where he is. And that in and of itself can be disruptive. They're going to shade that way. They're going to sort of attempt to force the play that way. I know they double teamed at least once. They double teamed him, but Will still made the play. I think he has one of his sacks. I think he had one of his sacks on a very poorly executed double team. Went back and watched the film on the tape on that one a couple of times. Just a barely, very poorly executed. The tackle sort of pushed him off to the guard, the pulling guard, without sort of feeling the guard there. And then by the time the guard got there, Will was had run around him, run around both linemen, and had made the play. So it'd be interesting to see how sort of that unfolds. But as we move forward, but Will Anderson, truly a disruptive player, and again, going to get better and better and better. And think about, I think he had 7 or 8 sacks last season, and he didn't get his first sack until after the halfway point of the season. So think about that. The memory we have of him is sort of late in the season, and we just kind of think, oh, yeah, he was that dominant all along. We might remember, oh, yeah, he really flashed in that Missouri game, and he did. But it was just a couple of flashes. It wasn't dominating the whole game. When we think, oh, he flashed at Missouri, and, man, he was a dominant player at the end of the season, we sort of think he was dominant the whole season. Our mind sort of plays that trick on us. And the reality is that's not true. He started, but he struggled. In a sort of a relative way. He was a true freshman in an SEC schedule. You would expect that. But when he truly got more and more comfortable and truly got his legs under him, so to speak, I think he had 7 or 8 tackles in the last 5 or 6 games. He was competing at that level. When now he seems bigger, he seems stronger. You know, if he was a T1, he's nicknamed the Terminator. If he was a T1, T1000 last season, he's a T3000 this season. He seems bigger. He seems more chiseled. He seems faster. He seems more confident. He would go in and sort of rush and really take away the runner on the RPO and leave the quarterback. Well, this year, I think the game would be slower for him. I think he could spot the ball. He wouldn't play just the assignment, but he would then start to play the ball. And I think he'd go in and potentially even try to, you know, maybe tackle both of them. So I think he's a better, improved player. Can't say enough good things about Will Anderson. I think that will continue to be the case. I think he's going to be a full-fledged weapon across the defensive front for Alabama. It is with sort of the inverse level of excitement, I guess, disappointment that I have for Chris Allen. Chris Allen is a player also that down the stretch, I think he finished with 7 or 8 sacks last year as well. And he did most of that work down the stretch. And it was mostly overshadowed by Will. But Chris Allen is a player that played at a very high level last season.
and was playing at a high level on Saturday against Miami before he went down with an injury. It looks like my first thought was a knee because he's had a knee injury before. Then he was in a boot, and I thought, well, that might be an ankle. And then it turned out that it was his foot. And I kept hoping if I can just get one more update that tells me it's a toe, then it's working its way out the leg. And, of course, that turns out not to be true. It is a foot injury. And the initial sort of early reports are that he might be done for the season. And the sentimental portion, sort of part of me, just a little heartbroken over that because I know he's such a hard worker. And he's been sort of under the radar for almost his entire career. As a sophomore, he was about to break out, and that's when he sort of broke his knee the first time. Last year, he was breaking out, but it was in the shadow of Will Anderson. And this year, it felt like he was recognized as a co-equal with Will, which is sort of the highest pub that he's gotten. And so he was recognized as sort of the bookend opposite of Will Anderson. And so I hate that, you know, that's when he gets injured, when he was just about to sort of manifest all of his years and all of experience and all of his time on campus. So I absolutely hate it for Chris Allen. Christopher Allen, I do think that there's a lot of depth behind him. And so as dismissive as this seems to Christopher, I think we have a lot of depth and capability and young talent behind him, such that it's not going to be a complete drop off at the position. And again, nothing against Chris when I say that. Drew Sanders stepped in Saturday, and I thought he played well, made some very good plays. He was in on the goal line stand tackle of Derek King to prevent a touchdown. And so that speaks to me as a youngster that's reading the play and not afraid to put his head in there and make a play. And so happy to see that for Drew Sanders. I do think we're going to see a more active rotation over there. Drew Sanders might be better in a run situation versus some of the other characters. I like Chris Braswell at the position. I think I like freshman Dallas Turner. I think we're going to see more opportunities for Dallas to get into the rotation. And probably saying the name incorrectly, but Cano Knott, another freshman, I think has an opportunity to get some reps there in the rotation as well. So we might net out not having a single person at the position, but we may net out with sort of a committee manning the position, which can help us from a depth perspective there as well. Phil Mathis, I thought, was just incredibly active early and often throughout the game. I think he made a number of plays. And I think his energy, we talked about him being a potential leader. I just think his energy rubs off on the other players up front as well. Toa Toa got dinged up, and I really hated to see that. It looked like it could be bad. And I was looking, where did the injury happen? It looked like, you know, when he hit him with the shoulder and knocked the guy out, I was like, that didn't look like that bad. And then it was when he hit the ground and sort of rolled. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, I see it now. That's where it happened. And so all reports are that he's going to be back, that he's going to – even Saban says, yeah, he'll be okay. And so so that is good. There was a scene on the sideline, and he was sitting next to Jalen Moody after Jalen had just made a play. And they were laughing, and they were cutting up, and he has this huge hand, and he had a glove on, and he was scratching his hair. It looked like he had fleas because he's really getting after – scratching his head. But if you look at it, it's almost like a magician, right? Don't look at what they're flashing around, but watch kind of what's harder to see. And so he's talking to Moody, and he's scratching his head, and he's laughing. And with his I guess his left arm, and you can see his right arm is in a sling. So it was sitting there, and so they're trying to immobilize it. But the way that he was just sitting there and cutting up and all that, it looked like he wasn't actively in sort of immense pain. So hopefully that's something that he's going to get some treatment for, be able to come back from, sort of get better and better. If we limit his reps against Mercer, that's okay. But if we can get him close to 100% for the Florida game, I think that'd be great. But he looked really good on the field, looked vocal, looked like a leader, and I think he helps Christian Harris. We've heard interviews about this, but I think he helps Christian Harris play a little more free, and I think that's going to benefit the defense as well. So that I think that's great news. I want to talk about the secondary a little bit, and again, there's a word I don't want to use. I don't want to use unsettled because that's negative. However, I don't know that the secondary is fully settled. So again, maybe it's a unit in transition. Brian Branch and Malachi Moore were both on the field together, which is sort of, you know, we've got to figure out a way to get these two guys on the field together. And we talked about that in some of our preseason. How do we do that? And who do you take off the field when you do that? Well, it turns out with DeMarco Helms injured, then that's a way you do it. And we don't want to take Helms off the field. So we still have the question, how do we get all these cats how do we get all these cats on the field? And so what's interesting is now on TV is a little more challenging. So I look forward to some live games. I know that Brian Branch played a lot at the star position. I think Malachi Moore started the game at the star position. And then they just sort of swapped from the safety, really the free safety, to the star position. And so one's a little further back, and then one's closer to the line of scrimmage. And that makes me wonder, why are we doing that? Why did we rotate those two players? And it could be that Brian Branch has outplayed Malachi at the position. Now, last year, we can certainly reason that Malachi outplayed Branch because he started at that position and held that position throughout the season until Malachi was injured, and then Brian Branch came in and played very, very well. And so it could be that Branch was maybe a little slower on the uptake in a relative way, but by the end of the season, he was full go. And during the offseason, he was full go. All reports are that he had a phenomenal fall camp. And so it could be that he has supplanted Malachi at the position, which is not a knock on Malachi because Malachi is still one of our best defenders, certainly one of our best secondary players. And so if we can get them both in the field in one capacity or another, I think that's phenomenal. There's another thought that I have. And again, this is just one of those things that I wonder. Malachi missed time last season because of a back injury. And there have been interviews and questions about his back injury. And Saban has said Malachi's back, he's healthy. He's like back, in a relative way. He's performing. But the thing about a back injury, and Saban sort of elaborated on this, didn't have to say this, but he said, the thing about a back injury is, he said, I've had back injuries. The thing about a back injury is you never know when it's going to flare back up. And that's true. So it makes me wonder when you think about supporting the running game and playing in the box and more hits and more physicality, you're going to have more of that on a consistent basis, more of that at the star position than you will at the safety position. So I wonder if it's not a matter of one being better than the other at a position, which it could be that, but if they're equal, then you still might would move them for the long-term health, the long-term option of keeping them both on the field. If you have Malachi making less physical plays at the line of scrimmage, So that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on there. And certainly when Helms returns, that's going to be interesting to see. He dressed. I think he was a game time decision. I think that was just let the player dress. I didn't expect that he would play, but I don't know that he would play against Mercer necessarily if he doesn't need to. But come Florida, it'll be interesting to see because that's when I think the rotations at a lot of positions sort of solidify, especially if injured players are coming back. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. God bless Daniel Wright. I think Daniel Wright did what we expect from him. He is super, and that sounds like an ass comment. I don't mean it that way. He is super fast and talented and physical, but sometimes he will just make the wrong play. I do think, and I sort of kidded a little bit, that the physicality in coverage must be something that they don't have in the Big 12 because the Big 12 was flag happy in the secondary. And sometimes they were deserved and sometimes they were not. And that I think that went both ways. But I think Daniel Wright was sort of the victim of that. There were a couple of plays that he should not have been flagged. And certainly there were a couple of plays where he should have been flagged. And so I don't know what they do for passing in the Big 12, certainly the games that are in the Big 10, certainly the games that I saw, I would answer not a whole lot, but it could be that those officials are not well-versed in covering the secondary. And so if I were the SEC, I would try to get Big 12 opponents or Big 12 officials where we can, maybe even ACC officials, anything but back, but Pac-10. I know we couldn't use ACC because of Miami. We should have gone Big 12 and officials instead of Big 10, but I don't know how the math on that sort of works out nonetheless. But the secondary, it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. So let's go mini game ball on defense. And I almost went without saying his name, but I think I did when we were talking linebackers. I'm giving my mini game ball to Jalen Moody. He stepped in for Hank when Hank went down for an injury, and he did not look like he needed to warm up. He looked like he was ready to go. He looked bigger than I remember him last season. He looked a lot more physical, a lot more physical, a lot more yoked. Bigger is what I'm trying to say. He looked a lot bigger, a lot more physical, played bigger, and then certainly had a big play, a big interception. And it was fun to see it again. I don't know if I'm projecting, but the team seemed to really rally around him. Now, you always sort of go to the guy who scores or makes the big play or interception and celebrate that. But there seemed to be, and again, the sentimental part maybe of me coming out, but there seemed to be a little bit more there because they knew that he was going to start in that position if Hank didn't come. And when Hank comes, it's almost like you've been demoted by virtue of this guy showing up. And that has been the reality of it. And it's nothing really against Moody in that area. We just have the opportunity to bring in an all-star. And so that's what you do. And so Moody is depth now. But as soon as he stepped in and had an opportunity to play, he makes a big play. And so the celebration, the rally around him seemed to be maybe even just a little bit more than it otherwise would have. All right. So let's flip to special teams. Not really impressive in with the punting. I think we had a shank. I think we had a short punt, 30-something yards, and then a shank. And so you think, why do we have to go to Australia to get that? And I'm not knocking the guy, but it just wasn't pleased with the punting there. I think we're going to see some improvement, but I expected that. I expected to see it immediately. The field goals. You know, Will Reichert, he came back and did Will Reichert things. Boy, it looked like he had a slice and a hook in one of his kicks. I thought certainly he was going to miss it, but it just sort of curved back in or sliced back in or hooked back in, however it works. And he looked very good there. He was doing the kickoffs, and we actually talked about Reichert doing kickoffs in our preseason show. We talked about a lot of stuff. And so we talked about whether or not he would do that, or one of the other guys did, would. And so Reichert did. And his first several kicks into the end zone, out of the end zone a couple times. And then he had late in the game, he must have had some leg fatigue. But later in the game, he had a short kick that didn't get to the end zone and went out of bounds. And so it was flagged. And so I hated to see that. But I wonder, I got a kid, maybe leg fatigue. I don't know, because he kicked so many. But early in the game, he was bombing those kicks. And so that was certainly fun to see. The punt return game, zero level surprise. Slade Bolden was the punt returner. I was hoping to see some JoJo Earl. We think that we will see some JoJo Earl in the punt return game. But I think Miami was using an Australian sort of style punter as well. And so, you know, the run out and the kick and sort of, I don't know if it's the sort of the trajectory, it's a non-standard. I mean, it's becoming more and more standard. But if you think about, you know, do we want to put the seasoned punt returner back for these different style kicks? Or do we want to put, you know, the true freshman back there for those style of kicks? I think it's a question that answers itself. And that's certainly what we saw Saturday. I think we will see some JoJo. I just not surprised that we didn't see him against an Aussie kicker sort of on the other side. I guess you could kid that, you know, now that we have an Aussie kicker, they can go off to a side field and practice the hell out of JoJo catching those. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have actually done some of that. I don't know. With Slade as well, but that'll be something interesting to see. And then, and damn it, if we didn't see Jaleel Billingsley back there returning a kick again. On one hand, I was glad to see it because maybe that represented him being out of the doghouse. And on the other hand, it's like, I don't like our tight end, even our most athletic tight end. I don't like him, fielding kickoff. So it sort of is what it is in that regard. So that's kind of what I got for special teams. When we think about our upcoming opponent, we've got Mercer, the Mercer Bears. You know, I would jokingly say, hey, they scored 66 points in their opener, so maybe we need to watch out. And then I think more realistically that 66 might be the over-under for Alabama score against the Bears. And I don't mean that ugly. I just mean, hey, we've played these guys before. It's a different level. It's not a fair fight. And I say all of that recognizing that Saban would chew me a new one for that, because the players can't have that mindset. As fans, it's okay. The players can't. And so there's sort of a dichotomy there. And I recognize it and I appreciate it. And I think most of our listeners do. So talking amongst ourselves, a 66-3, a 66-10, that style of game, I wouldn't be surprised. I do think it's a name your score. And I do think we're going to see a lot of players play, a lot of players on both sides of the ball. And so I think that's going to be fun. If you don't watch the youngsters, you're going to get bored with this game quickly because the stars will be out and the game will be over. But if you're watching the rotations and you're watching sort of the future stars for Alabama, which could even be later this season, certainly in seasons to come, then this is one of those just grab your popcorn and watch the game, because you're gonna see a lot of players you're not used to seeing, and a lot of production I think from them as well. So that's what I have there. One thing I'll just sort of wrap with. I've mentioned the Zoom calls a couple of times. I'm gonna plug them again. If you have a question about the Zoom calls, I'm gonna direct you to email me, obviously, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. If you email me, spoiler alert, I'm gonna send you to a page on our website, alabamafootballpodcast.com. There's a sort of an article about joining our member team. There's a big sort of on the side, you can't miss it. It says, you know, support your podcast. Go there and you can find out some more information. But we have sort of a member group. It's, $18 a year or $2 a month. So join for a couple of months, a couple of dollars, a cup of coffee, and, participate in one of the Zoom calls, or at least get access to download and listen to the Zoom calls, because we have a private feed that group sort of enjoys and participates in. But nonetheless, on the Zoom call that we had Saturday, before the Miami game, and it was about a 2-hour call with 10 or 12 folks and just talking football and just kind of hanging out, if you will, on a Saturday morning talking ball. We always sort of tradition at the end of those calls. We started them last season, or second season, we brought them back, where we sort of predict the Alabama game. And so what the final was 44-13. Dr. J and I both predicted 41-17. So we were really close, but sort of the Price is Right style, Wayne said, I'm going to go 42-17. So he said, you know, $1. And so he sort of beat us out in that regard. Clint had Miami at 10, but had the Alabama score very different. Beth had Miami at 14, but her Alabama score was way off. So they got the Miami side of it a little closer, but they're farther off on the Alabama. And but Wayne, or Cole, 42-17. So he's our winner on in that regard. So if you're interested, if you want to pick the score for with us on the call, on the Zoom call next week, then hit us up. Join the membership thing. We'll get you a Zoom link, and we'll get those up and running. And I look forward to you joining our conversation. I can't tell you how much fun. I've said this to them. I don't know if I've said this on the public show. If I wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to stop doing the podcast because it's a lot of work, and as a hobby, I just want to spend my time in different directions. If I wake up one day and make that decision, I will keep the Zoom calls because that's just a bunch of friends talking football. And sometimes the podcast feels like work and the Zoom call feels like play. And so I'm not saying that I'm going to do that. I'm just saying that if I ever do, then the Zooms will stay. And so get on the Zooms while you can, right? All right. So that's what I have. Drop us some emails. Leave us a review. Download us. All the stuff that we want you to do to support the show. We very much value and appreciate your support. It helps us keep going. It's motivating. And we certainly enjoy and participate the engagement as well. That is, I can't put a value on that. Really, really do appreciate it. So reach out and engage us in that regard. So there you go. A little bit shorter show, not a whole lot, I guess, but a little bit. We'll see how this plays out. If you have any feedback, don't hesitate to drop us a note and let us know how that goes as well. In the meantime, yep, you guessed it. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll
Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.